Dr. J. Michelson is a rabbi, an activist, an author, an attorney, a friend. Admitted to the Supreme Court bar, Jay is a former clerk for Judge Merrick Garland and has unique insights into the breathtaking Republican flip-flop on late-term judicial appointments. Jay, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Always a pleasure.
Wow, this is a new low, even for this crowd. When you see the clips of Mitch McConnell, Lindsey Graham, and the rest from 2016, what goes through your mind?
Well, that hypocrisy doesn't really matter anymore. It is remarkable that a party that ostensibly is devoted to certain kinds of virtues and moral values throws all of those to the wind when they want to get something. And in this case, that something is a conservative supermajority in the Supreme Court. And they're willing to sacrifice any hint of moral scruples to do that.
I wish you would just remind our listeners about what happened to Judge Merrick Garland, because I also think that shocking behavior should have been a warning on what was to come.
Yeah, I think in retrospect, that seems right. I mean, that was about 280 days before the 2016 election. All of the leading characters who are now in play, Mitch McConnell, Lindsey Graham, down the line, said that there's no way that we could consider a nominee to a Supreme Court, to the Supreme Court in an election year. They made that rule up. They claimed that it had existed before, but they really made it up out of whole cloth simply because they wanted to stonewall President Obama's nominee. That worked. Ultimately, they had the power. Mitch McConnell has permanently damaged the Senate by eliminating the filibuster in a lot of these cases, especially around the Supreme Court. That was called the nuclear option. So we're already living in the nuclear winter. It's now, unfortunately, it's now going to be up to the Democrats to radically shift institutions. The only recourse they really have is to increase the size of the court. We probably should get away from this term court packing, which is a negative term, and just accept the fact that while all of us alive have only known 9 justices in the Supreme Court, that is an arbitrary number, and 11 or 13 or even 15 makes just as much sense. So it'll be up to the Democrats if they win this election in the Senate as well as the presidency to fix what the Republicans have broken.
Jay, I just have to ask you, have you had any contact with Judge Garland since that debacle, and do you know how he's been?
I have had a fair amount of contact with him. I'm a former clerk to Judge Garland, and there's an annual clerk get-together. This year it was virtual, of course, but he's a very steady guy. And as I said, when he was being somewhat semi-considered as a nominee, you know, that was a virtue that he really brought to the bench. He just was a very careful, deliberative thinker. And that's true now, or at least, you know, I haven't spoken to him since Justice Ginsburg passed, but I've been in touch with him earlier this year as well as over the last few years. And I think he is very aware of the fact that, you know, what happened in 2016 had nothing to do with him. That this was a political firestorm that he was caught in the middle of. And, you know, back at that time, when I was in touch with him, he was still preparing for a full nomination vetting process as if that was going to happen. He was getting ready for hearings and kind of his attitude was, I'm going to do what my job is, and my job is to be ready and if called. And that's been true over the intervening few years. He's now the chief judge at the D.C. Circuit. That is itself a very important role, and he's been filling it to the admiration of folks on both sides of the aisle.
You've written articulately on the passing of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg for the Daily Beast, the hypocrisy of trying to ram through a nominee in the last few days of this administration. You call it a power grab by a minority party whose grip on power is slackening. I wish you would talk about that.
on the show, you've had conversations, about the sort of the end of white Christian America, meaning the end of a certain kind of hegemony of a certain kind of conservative white Christian dominated society. And that's certainly true. Demographically, those numbers are what they are. That's not going to change. Will that tide turn this year, or will it take another couple of election cycles? That I don't know. That's kind of above my pay grade. But it is going to turn. No amount of voter suppression can hold back that change long enough. Of course, now, with each passing day, the stakes get higher. Now the president says he might not respect the orderly transfer of power, which is like a cornerstone of our democracy. But failing something like that, this is a minority party. The Senate, which was conceived, it's kind of too long to go into now, but was conceived as an instrument of maintaining a kind of white supremacy, is functioning that way. It represents, it disproportionately represents a small portion of the country. Senate Republicans won fewer votes than Senate Democrats in the last Senate election, even though they have more seats, right, just because of the nature of small states tending to vote Republican. So it's already an anti-democratic institution that's ruled by a minority party, but they're potentially in line to lose even that. That is inevitable, whether it happens in 2020 or 2024 or some other time. That is going to happen. And so these should be understood as rear guard action, as desperately trying to maintain power as long as possible. But ironically, maybe it's not ironic, maybe it's just deservedly, the harder they try to do that, the quicker that power will disappear. Because this is something, this is not, many times you and I have spoken about how liberals don't care about the courts as much as conservatives do. Mm-hmm. That's not true now. Right now we have a Supreme Court battle looming right in the center of this contentious election, right in the center of racial justice protests, and right in the center of the pandemic. So it's right up there, and it's right in front of folks. And this may well animate Donald Trump's hard right base as well, but it certainly puts the court front and center. And that hopefully will be true in Senate elections too. Mitch McConnell is in a tight race for his own Senate seat. There's certainly plenty of outside money supporting his opponent, Amy McGrath, and hopefully that will increase because this is one man who has really misshapen the entire federal court system for the last 4 years and has junked every standard of Senate procedure that stood in his way. So whether it's the approval of home state senators for judicial nominees, whether it's the process, the confirmation process, which he expedited, I've described it as turning it into a Las Vegas wedding in one of my Daily Beast pieces. And, simply how, whether it's requiring ABA certifications, the Republicans have rubber stamped a number of unqualified judges who are now there with life tenure. And all of that's happened kind of maybe a little bit behind the scenes, but it's not behind the scenes now. And so I do have a little bit of optimism that this power grab will have consequences.
So, Jay, when you write there will be hell to pay, what do you mean?
I mean that two things in particular. First, what we just talked about, that this is now a very high profile issue for the left as well as the right. And second, the Democrats themselves. I mean, if they do retake power of all three, the Senate, the House, and the presidency, any pretense that they need to play nice, when they go low, we go high, is gone. I mean, this is what's happening now with this judicial confirmation process is a complete travesty. It is an outrageous manipulation and display of hypocrisy such that we have not seen even from this Senate. And anyone with a conscience can see that. One may think that hypocrisy is justified in order to save unborn life or something like that, but you have to admit that it's there. So the gloves will be off, and the hell to pay, if the voters show up at the polls in November, the hell to pay will be ramming a lot of things through over minority objections. It'll mean, filling judicial seats with no regard for anything like the filibuster or the shoe will be on the other foot. Mm-hmm. Justice Ginsburg cited that old cliche in an oral argument just last year, what's good for the sauce that's good for the goose is good for the gander. And this is the new normal. And there can be no conversation that, Democrats shouldn't disturb the integrity of their court or the system or anything like that. That's already gone out the window. So So I was never one to publicly support changing the size of the Supreme Court or taking drastic measures like that, but I am now. And that's the hell to pay. This you can't do what they're doing now and not expect there to be payback.
I've got two questions for you, and I want to get both of them in if I can. Ultimately, is the Amy Coney Barrett thing a done deal, do you think?
No, I don't think. One thing that Donald Trump has done with his two Supreme Court picks is defy conventional wisdom. I just finished, I think the piece will be launching by the time this airs, a long profile of Judge Barrett and her positions on key issues. She is the odds-on favorite. She's an extremely qualified candidate. Qualified doesn't mean someone I would personally want to see on the bench, but you know, she's exceptionally intelligent, capable, and with no ethical blemishes on her record. So she is sort of the perfect candidate, but it could be anything. It seems, you know, it seems that Trump may well make politics the deciding factor in who he picks. And so I wouldn't say it's a done deal, no. I would say that whoever he picks is going to be put on the court. That is a done deal.
Yeah. So this week, the president cast doubt on the peaceful transfer of power itself, a core value this nation has prided itself on for centuries. How does that tie in with who's on the high court? And this is really important, what should all of us be doing right now?
All of us progressives should be phone banking and clearing our schedules for the first week of November to help people vote and do get out the vote. This is a base election. It's the middle is barely exists. Very few people are undecided. The polls are still pretty good for Joe Biden, but it's a matter of who shows up at the polls and who's able to show up at the polls. You know, there is violence on the streets right now in Louisville. Louisville is in Kentucky, right? Mitch McConnell's home state. Kentucky is a state that has gerrymandered the hell out of its congressional districts and has closed all but one polling place in its largest community, its largest black community. So this is the new Jim Crow writ large. And so this is a good example, right? I mean, if people of color are able to show up to the polls, and if they're able to wait 4 hours in the middle of a pandemic because they can't vote by mail because Kentucky doesn't want them to vote, if they're able to actually triumph over all of the obstacles that Mitch McConnell and his party are putting in their ways, well, there could be real change, right? But it's going to take a lot of support. It's not just to tell someone, an individual, that you have to individually jump through all these hurdles and jump over all these obstacles that a gigantic machine is putting in your place. That person needs support, and that support is us. And so whether that means showing up physically, personally, and helping folks vote, or whether it means getting on the phone, or whether it means having, you know, conversations, individual conversations, one voter at a time, that's what we need to be doing. I may regret these words, but I think a lot of what Donald Trump says right now is just to get headlines, distract, and feed his base, right? And anytime liberals get outraged, his base gets very happy, right? They get to own the libs. So I refuse to give them that happiness and that satisfaction. He can say what he wants. What I'd like to see is a world in which this is not a close election, in which the Electoral College margin, you know, is quite significant, and that everybody sees exactly what's happened. That makes his threats even more empty than I think they already are.
Dr. Jay Michelson is a rabbi, attorney, an author, and an activist who is also a meditation teacher and a frequent contributor to the Daily Beast and other publications. His books include Enlightenment by Trial and Error, 10 Years on the Slippery Slopes of Jewish Spirituality, Postmodern Buddhism, and Other Mystical Heresies. Thank you so much for being with us on State of Belief Radio.
Always a pleasure. Let's get out there and work, folks.